Welcome to our afternoon and final panel for our panel, our final session of the Sunstone West. I'm Ka'ine Wenger, and this is the keynote presentation for our Sunstone West conference. So thank you all. I'll start off by saying thank you for coming to Sunstone here in San Diego. It's been a pleasure to see you all in all these panels. And of course, the panels couldn't happen without everybody we see here in the audience who spoke or who moderated. So let's give a big round of applause for our speakers and moderators as well. So at this point, you have endured to almost the end, and you've heard about polygamy or violence, the race and the priesthood, or Mormons and Christianity, Book of Abraham, or Book of Mormon and First Vision, lots of really interesting content. We have a, how do you top that, or if not top, how do you sum that up, or how do you give a conclusion to that? We have a keynote speaker who is fortunately somebody who we're very honored to have here, and who has the depth in Mormon studies and the background to do exactly that. So let's just introduce our keynote. Our keynote is George Smith. He is a graduate of Stanford University and New York University, and is author of the landmark Mormon Pioneer Diary, An Intimate Chronicle, The Journals of William Clayton, and also the book which many of us have seen, Nauvoo Polygamy, which is one of the important volumes in understanding polygamy, with the great subtitle, of course, but we called it Celestial Marriage, the book which received the Best Book Award in 2008 from the John Whitmer Historical Association, and which was revised and updated in 2011. George Smith has published in Dialogue, in Free Inquiry, the John Whitmer Historical Journal, Journal of Mormon History, Restoration Studies, and Sunstone. He's also a generous individual without whom these conferences would not be possible, and so we definitely want to thank him for that and for making this possible. And with that, I turn the time over to George Smith.
Let's see, which is the...
Here we go. I hold this. Walked away with it. Okay. You can hold it or clip on either one.
All right. I heard all these subjects mentioned. Does that mean these are excluded from my presentation? Shall I be editing very quickly? You don't want to hear any more of this. Before I begin, I'd like to... I was going to end with, but maybe I will begin with, a poem. And this is from the Kenyon Review, by Jacques Rancourt, and it's called Against Whitman. I won't interpret it, but you can think about it while I'm talking on about other subjects. I know our decision to live doesn't come from within, that even the smallest sprout shows there really is no death. Erosion leads us onward. The cliffs that break us down, the sea that sweeps clean our greatest triumphs, our mistakes, the statute of a god uncovered from seaweed, the body of my cousin, all goes out and down when everything collapses. But if to die is different than anyone supposes, and luckier, it begs the question I have yet to ask. I'm not commenting. Most of our discussions today have dealt with essays, and it's kind of like a people's revolution. There's an organization, whether it be the Romans, the British, or somebody with a government, and then there are the people, and the people want to know, and they march. And they ask questions, they petition, they write letters. Nowadays, they are interested in essays. They're demanding answers. They want to know, what does this mean? How do you explain this inconsistency? Why should I be here? What is the value? And there are a lot of questions. Doesn't mean there aren't a lot of good things to be here for, but these questions, many of which are real. And of course, they're plural marriage, which is something I have spoken about earlier today, is something that I've been interested in. But there's all sorts of questions, issues about race, about literature, about translation. The essays that we're dealing with now in the community of saints, both gatherings of communities, I would say, and others, represents a sea change in honesty. And Sunstone has led out with the examination of these essays. Essays more than questions of honesty deal with areas that deserve forthright answers. Accounting for the early New York experiences, the missing plates, the errors in the King James translation of the Bible found in the Book of Mormon, Masonic roots of Mormon tradition, and of course, plural marriage. How do we forget the extra wives? What are the roots of the Book of Mormon? Conditional polygamy, extensive practice in Nauvoo, revolt against polygamy and death, migration into Mexican territory, all ways of voting with our feet, so to speak. And we look at things differently. We forget and we remember. And looking at polygamy, of course, it was first announced in 1852. Well, that's a long time after the Book of Mormon contains some mention of polygamy in 1830. And it's a little bit of time, 12 years, after polygamy began on a community basis in Nauvoo, Illinois, along the banks of the Mississippi River. So it's announced in 1852. It's in the finally gets a place in the Doctrine and Covenants in 1876, that is, in the Utah Church. It's shut down in 1890. Then where does that lead us? Then we have forgetting about it, remembering, and it goes back and forth. We have issues of women and the priesthood. These are issues which the churches treat differently. The Community of Christ invites women to have priesthood responsibilities and become bishops and leaders in areas where the Utah Church presently restricts to men. Well, the Masonic organization, which lent some aspects of temple clothing and ceremony, forbade women from the Masonic temple. And a lot of the early Mormons were Masons. So there's sort of a process of change in place, and the change has not happened, but the process is in place. And we have Laurie Winder working on the women's access to Mormon meetings, official Mormon meetings and conference. And as Cleopatra expressed to Mark Anthony, she is not prone to argue. We have a number of topics that represent this response to our questions, which have been reflected in computer sites such as MormonNewsroom.org, Gospel Topics. The church provides context for recent media coverage on something called Gospel Topics. And I think most of you know a lot more than I do about that. But the Gospel Topics landing page on LDS.org was updated a year ago. Actually in 2013. And it's been redesigned. There are a lot of changes in the format of these sites, these websites. Some of the in-depth issues include: are Mormons Christian? First Vision accounts, race in the priesthood, plural marriage and families in early Utah, Book of Mormon translation, Book of Mormon and DNA studies, Becoming Like God, Peace and Violence Among 19th Century Latter-day Saints, Translation and the Historicity of the Book of Abraham, and then these two topics last October, Plural Marriage in Kirtland and Nauvoo, and then the Manifesto and the End of Plural Marriage, both of those in October 2014. These essays had varying responses in the press. The one on plural marriage got an extraordinary response. And the headline, I don't know who writes those headlines, but that was very, very bright. And I was telling somebody, we haven't seen Peggy Fletcher for a while. She's, you know, people have tried to call her and say, well, who wrote that headline? And did you really write that text? And what's going on? And I think that was a very heavy and strong statement. And then it brings to question why the Salt Lake Tribune and why not the Deseret News, the church-owned newspaper? Why would the church release an essay? Somebody, a middle person, contact Peggy Fletcher with the Tribune and have the Tribune publish it rather than Deseret News? I don't know the answer, but I wonder if there are poles of difference, people who don't agree with the approach of releasing all this information, and maybe there's another shoe that's going to drop. I really don't know, but it's kind of interesting to try to figure this out. After historical inquiry erodes collective forgetting, then we sometimes forget, remember, and we get this historical whiplash, which of course again is that subject of polygamy. Once material is published, used to be published by reputable authors, now everything's available nationally and internationally on the internet. So the way to find this stuff, sometimes one doesn't know where to look for these ideas, but LDS.org is the website that probably will have much of the material. There is one comment that I thought I would mention by Hans, maybe Mattson, a former Mormon Swedish church leader who spoke of finding information on the internet that contradicted the church teachings and history. He was a leader of the church in Europe, and members came to ask him for answers. He expressed the need for the church to be more forthcoming and acceptance of those who had doubts. One of the leaders of this more attentive focus on history is the person of Stephen E. Snow. Elder Snow is called to serve as member of the First Quorum of 70 in March of 2001, and he's been a general authority of the church and is now involved very strongly in expressing issues of church history. really taking over some of the work that Marlon K. Jensen has done. So there are things that to bring up the name on the computer of Stephen Snow is probably kind of interesting. And General Authority Stephen Snow admits Mormon Church has hidden facts. Well, what does that mean? Elder Snow is on something called Episode 20, Mormon Channel. These are all sites. BYU TV, General Authority homepage, Snow appointed to position in Obama administration. And he's, recently replaced Marvin K. Jensen as church historian and recorder. He is going very deeply into topics of church history and responds to claims that only believing Latter-day Saints can write an accurate history. He says, I don't agree with that. And he stretches out a broader reach to invite those who can write and contribute to church history. And that might include various people in this room who want to take part in that. Some of the gospel topics at first blush, there seem to be around 200 titles of gospel topics that one comes from LDS.org, gospel topics, and they include things like Aaronic priesthood, abortion, abuse, addiction, apostasy, patriarchal blessings, pearl of great price, polygamy, pornography, priesthood and race, profanity, proxy baptism, and there's really quite a large number. Health practices, which I'm assuming, I didn't really look at that one, but I think that includes word of wisdom, of which there are some questions and some change perhaps. Again, race in the church, Brigham Young Church History Library, which is really adopting a different function than it used to, with the sign that I think is taken down now, Church History, No Admittance. I don't think that sign is still there, but I do remember that well. Issues like temples, temple garments, Family History Library, embryonic stem cell research, core beliefs, and it goes on and on. And then there are additional resources that come up periodically. I won't go into all that, but this is quite a subject. Just trying to find your way through these various sites, and I guess. Bloggers and computer aficionados can really do this very well, and there's a lot we can do just by searching. So I found 191 topics at one point, and I think those topics change all the time. And I had some notes on polygamy. There is a feminist housewife, feminist Mormon housewives podcast. I think Lindsay is responsible for that. Is that a comment of approval? there's episode 1, 2, 3, 4. I don't know how many episodes. I'm looking at, I've got 76 episodes. And episode 1 is Fanny Alger, episode 2, Lucinda Morgan Harris, Louisa Beeman, Zina Huntington. These are all plural wives of Joseph Smith. And they go on for quite a while. But I have to say that Lindsay has been very busy and kept a very high profile. And I think she deserves applause. She's apparently one of the main reasons we're all here, too. Or at least I'm here. I did get a call from her. She's my priesthood leader. going through, I don't know if I can interpret all these podcasts, but they... Four, Blockhead on Year of Polygamy, Secrets and Wives with Sanjeev Bhattacharya, Episode 74. Who in the world knows what this means? But I think there's some serious issues here that we just need to educate ourselves. Amidst the New Mormon essay, Joseph Smith Married Teens, which we've been through quite a number of times, I think there's nobody here that is not aware of that. And then I have a lot of notes on plural marriage in Kirtland, Nauvoo, families in early Utah, issues about manifesto and end of plural marriage, polygamy then and now, and there's something specially on Mercy Thompson and the revelation on marriage related to DNC 132. And let's see. I had some comments on collective amnesia and recovery of the past. We all worked in the same session, but I'm still not going to repeat it all. But we have several times gone back and forth, forgotten the past, remembered it, forgotten it. Sometimes the remembering and the forgetting go simultaneously in opposite directions. And that's been really quite exciting to watch and to follow. And there are reasons to forget and reasons to remember. I think with the way we keep things on computer and communicate electronically, we'll be less able to lose or hide what we might have had before on paper. There was a lot of difficulty with paper being collected and then lost, and there's a lot of focus on the 32 members of Joseph Smith's inner circle who put the basis of plural marriage in Nauvoo together. They had 32 men marrying an average of 9 to 10 women, which formed really the core of Nauvoo polygamy. And we quickly get way beyond the issue. Did Joseph marry Fanny Alger back in Kirtland, or did he not? You have such an overwhelming number of people following that it becomes less and less relevant when it precisely began or when it collectively got big enough to have a center of gravity that made it impossible to forget. I think issues of race we've talked about briefly. I'm not sure how much we need to deal with that. There are issues of peace and violence among 19th century Latter-day Saints. Violence in Utah territories, Latter-day Saints' relationship with American Indians, Reformation and the Utah War, and of course the Mountain Meadows Massacre, which is in the process of research presently, right now. And I think some of that stuff is really due to come out pretty soon. Can I ask by a show of hands how many people have searched the computer with looking for gospel topics? Most everybody. Wow. Anybody who hasn't? One and not very many. You're probably way ahead of me. Where is this going to go? Once we're here, is this the final level of communication between people who study issues of church history and events, or is something new going to happen? What can happen from here? Can podcasts become any more intense? I don't think so. I am ready to entertain anybody's question if you had something you wanted to ask me. Otherwise, I think I've reviewed most of the subjects that I remember experiencing in this conference. I am very happy to have the experience of being here. I think this is a group which is going to be quite dominant in forming questions and bringing answers that we haven't seen to the extent we'd like to. Yes.
For me, it was very interesting because this particularly First Vision and all of those stories first came out in the late 60s, early 70s. They were, and we didn't have the internet or the blogosphere, and but that produced the content. And as somebody who's interested in media and how you've got to have somebody providing the content in order for it to then be put on the internet, how important were those early historical discoveries, and will we have that going forward? Will we have the people who are writing books and essays and so on that will continue getting the content out there?
A question is about content and reference the First Vision. Don't you think there were a lot of issues about the First Vision back in 1832, 33, 36. I mean, serious questions, people leaving. If you lost a third of the membership, including a third of the apostles, in 1837, leaving from Kirtland on west, it seems like at that time there were issues that not only financial issues, not only Fanny Alger issues, but I think I remember reading things about First Vision. But so your question is the methodology of asking those questions. Is that right?
If we don't have researchers turning up the historical facts for people to put on the internet, will we have the information going forward?
Problem I see is credibility. I mean, anybody can do a blog, anybody can do a podcast, anybody can do these things.
Right.
So the question is are we dumbing down, or are we illuminating?
Well, there's certainly a horizontal expansion. More people are doing a lot of different things. Now, whether that includes some dumbing down, like democracy is dumbing down, sort of, but very important. And maybe there's a little bit of rhythm. Maybe there's dumbing down, and some people are focusing and going deeper. So we might have some of each. That's a good question, though. Please.
I don't think that the internet will put an end to sort of traditional academics. If anything, I think that it's becoming more and more competitive to fill those niches of the expert roles. And so you're having to get more and more credentials. You're having to do more and more research to get there. And if anything, the problem with the internet is that there's too many content providers, and so how do you find the best information? And so really the way of the future in the internet is kind of pushing the absolute best content to the people who are looking for it. And like I said, with that much content out there, you really have to compete hard in order to fill those top slots. So I think, if anything, the internet is going to push the bar higher and higher.
Can I ask you a question back? And that is, initially these comments were put kind of quietly on the internet, and then someone looked back and said, "Oh, we've already talked about that a long time ago." Is that a strategy that still can continue, and is it a useful strategy? Can that be?
If you go out on the message boards and you ask a basic question like, "I just found out there's multiple accounts of the First Vision and they disagree with each other," you get like swamped with people calling you a troll. And how could you possibly not know this already? We've talked about this 1,000 times on this message board. So yeah, you definitely. I mean, there's kind of the barriers to admission for people who are just getting into this stuff.
And that's a tricky thing too, because like, I asked my dad that same question. He's like, "Well, you didn't know this?" And it's like, "No, I didn't know this." You know, like, yeah, like, I mean, like, there's a challenge. Like, even if something is published, like, if a tree falls in the forest, it doesn't make a sound, right? Like, I'm a huge proponent for publishing online, but just getting something online doesn't mean it's good to be heard. Right? And so, like, with publishing, there needs to be a way to inform. Right? And
well, don't you need a way to focus? So it's just not a random noise, but it's got an image and it goes somewhere.
Sure, that it's helpful to provide direction, but I think at the same time, like the church publishing the essays is a big start, right? Because they're at least acknowledging a problem. Mm-hmm. But on the same token, like if you go to any LDS church building and say, "Have you read the church essays? Have you read the one on race and the priesthood? Have you read the one on multiple accounts of the First Vision?" Like, they'll say, "Wait, what? Church essays?"
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, like, there's still a bigger problem of informing Vox Populi of, like, what the, of these issues. And as the church hopefully publishes more in the future, informing people of that in the future, too. Yeah. My two friends.
Please.
One way to think about it is, Clay Shirky talked about this, used to be that it was so expensive to publish stuff, you edited before and then published.
Right.
And now everything's published, and the editing comes in the search engines, right? So it's a little bit of both. I think that information's going to be out there now forever after. You can have, you know, church websites that are okay to look at for the LDS folks. They'll never see this other stuff. But my whole family has no clue about this stuff, and it's just maddening because they won't go look at the internet. It's evil.
Well, is the genie out of the bottle? You can't put it back in, or is there just too much stuff to focus on?
So the danger is the information can be there, it's hiding in plain sight. But if you control the access, if you control the editing or the search, then you still got it.
I think we had another question.
I just wanted to say as an aside that before we had the internet, we had a few heroic people, and one of them are with us today, Sandra Fanner.
And I didn't pay him.
No, Fanner, she's not letting me do her biography. She found somebody else to do it. So I really am unbiased about it.
I think we have an objection to that support. Did you want to object to that?
No, it's not an objection. I just wanted to say that as, I think a lot of us attend probably a lot of conferences, and one of the litmuses for success, I think, is how much diversity is present in age is one, because I feel like we have no guarantee that we're just not going to keep recreating the wheel if we don't have a really good intergenerational cross-section. So I appreciate you coming. I appreciate you sharing your knowledge with us. And I appreciate that Sunstone draws this diverse crowd. Sunstone, like, you know, all the blogger Nagel knows that we need to do a better job with people of color. We need to do a better job with single people. We need to do a better job with the very young, right? Like those coming up. But that specific layer of it, where we have a really good, robust conversation that involves, hey, this is what it was like, you know, coming up, and here's the history that I'm bringing to it. I'm just very grateful for it, and I appreciate having a community that supports that. So thank you.
Well, thank you for your question. Thank you for your.
I'd just like to thank everyone again for coming, and thank Amy Wanger from the Sensome Board of Education. He secured this amazing venue for us, which I think is fantastic. And I just wanted to thank George as our keynote, and Brad, I have one of these for you too. It's a plaster sunstone replica of the sunstone. So thank you.
Oh, my goodness.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, everybody, thank you for coming.
Very heavy.
Subscribe to the magazine and travel home safely. Thanks.